You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger, inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Well, you guys have returned to the Break It Down podcast, which I'm very thankful for. The show is it really is a lot of fun. It's the easiest, simplest thing that I do that I purely enjoy doing. One of those things I love to do is talk to people recurringly, and Tim from Under Oath is one of those guys. He and I are on the same wavelength, so it's super easy to say, let's get on air and catch up, and there's plenty to catch up about with this new Under Oath record, Erase Me. It's kind of been a roller coaster of, you know, putting it out and getting online hate and people nervous about it, and then putting out more, and then, I don't know, it's been a really fun vicarious ride for me to see, is this thing going to work? Is it not going to work? And we just found out that it came out after we taped this conversation and is number 4 on Billboard and sold a ton of records. And by all measures, it seems like it's been very successful. And they've even won a ton of new fans and taken a bunch of their old fans that were skeptical and have won them over through their marketing effort and their what they've done and how they've done it, and plenty of things that could have gone another way that I would have second guessed, but they know what they're doing. And so I wanted to get on with Tim and see what was the process like. How did they even arrive at this style of music at this point in their career? And what's behind the changes, and who did what, and what did the producer have to do with it? And you know, what's the process been here? And so we don't talk forever here. There's plenty more to talk about, but there's some really interesting things, you know, if you're interested in the Under Oath record and behind the scenes and hearing it discussed in a casual vibe between two friends. That's what today's episode is, and I hope you enjoy it. You might want to get an Under Oath, you know, hoodie or something like that. Maybe go over and look at rockabilia.com. And see if you can find some Under Oath gear or some other gear that you like over there. It's officially licensed merchandise. They sponsor the show. It's a great website, makes a great gift, and you get 15% off if you use the code PCJabberjaw when you shop at rockabilia.com, which I recommend. All right, I'll let you hear me and Tim having a combo. Here we go.
Break it down, Dada.
Break it down, oh, break it down. Break it down, oh, break it down. Break it down, oh, break it down. Break it down, oh, break it down.
Like Matt Carter.
Yeah. All right, Tim, what the hell's going on, man? It's good to talk to you again.
Dude, yeah. Feel like we spoke for a while for a minute and then not a lot for a while.
Well,
here we are.
Fun.
Back again.
I was trying to get you addicted to podcasting so you'd go start your own, but you hadn't done it yet.
I was actually just about to say that. I was like, figured since I can't figure out enough time to start my own, might as well talk to you as much as I can, keep my chops up.
Well, we're doing video today, which is cool. And you are doing what? You're walking around your house right now on your
mobile. Oh, yeah. We're all
drinking
moving wine. So I got nowhere to sit, so I'm just gonna sit right here and prop you up on some banana peppers and we'll get it going.
That's great. You're drinking wine, which makes me a little angry, but not really angry at you. It just makes me mad at my time zone because I'm always, you know,
you're always a couple hours behind.
No, it's behind here, so it's still morning for me. Like, it's 11:30, so I'm not gonna drink. And we always do the podcast early. I see Toby drinking Miller Lite at it'll be 4 p.m. his time. I go, man, that looks good, but it's you know, 1 o'clock
you just
here.
Got done with lunch.
Day. I'm just
you literally just got done with lunch. What can you do?
Yeah, I need to set at least one podcast a week that's at night, so I can drink a couple beers and wine like you. It just would be more fun. I'd be better at it.
Well, I'll abstain just so that we're all on a level here. Long.
What are you doing? You're moving. You're moving right now?
Yeah, man. My in-laws are moving to Africa for 5 years.
Okay.
So we're going to take over their
Sounds
house.
Normal.
They're going to Swaziland. They're going to go take over a church there, and they feel pretty inspired to do so. So we're all supporting them, and they needed someone to watch their house. So that's me. So me and my wife and my three kids are going over there, and my neighbor's renting my house, and we'll take it year by year and see how that works. Should be interesting.
That is great.
Yeah, man.
Just, you know, we're going to talk about Under Oath. Don't worry. I'll get there in a second, but I'm catching up with Tim. So y'all just had to sit through this. But Tim, I am so excited when people do non-standard things, especially with their family, like move to somewhere else or do a thing or live in a RV or
go camping
whatever
for
it is.
3 days. For no good reason.
Like most people your age with a family are just, they're not doing weirder things or going to live in somebody else's house or living the kind of lifestyle you live and making, you know, you made giant changes in your lifestyle many times. And it's so cool to see people designing. I mean, this is the way I think about everything, but you're designing your own life and you're taking into account not this perfect roadmap of what you think life should be. And you have your house and you do this and you grow and you whatever. And you're just taking the information and data that comes, responding and reacting, changing your goals, looking at what the, you know, facts are on the ground, making a new decision that you are in charge of. And you can do that with your career and you can do that with your family. You can do that with your whole life. And that is exciting to me.
It is weird because like my brother-in-law, Nate from Amber Lynn, who I own King State with, we're doing some stuff now and we just constantly get caught up in conversations about how our family's very split. We don't really have any middle ground. We have a couple dudes in bands and then a couple dudes in like corporate 9-to-5 401k jobs, and everyone's equally as happy. And I don't think you have to do one or the other, but it's just strange when they will ask questions and it's like, well, what are you doing now? It's like, oh, we're just going to go buy a gas station and try to start a bar. Like,
right.
How are you going to do that? Oh, we'll figure it out.
Figure it out.
It's just money and it's just like culture and vibe. And like, we know that. So like, we just got to figure out a little bit of money stuff. And we're good. And everyone's just minds are melting.
That's
and it's
crazy.
Just a really interesting dynamic to just have, you know, this is the only life I've ever known. You know, when I was 17, I joined Under Oath. I think this year I've been in Under Oath more than I haven't since I've been alive. And so it's just weird for me to think of anything any other way. And I think you're the same. I mean, you've been in Emory. I've known you for 15 years now. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you guys have just kind of done whatever you want. When your band started like not going the way you wanted, or you wanted to get settled down and stop touring as much, you just, instead of getting another job and going, can I take 3 weeks off a year so I can go do a little tour, started a podcast, and then you started the podcast network, and then that now funds what Emory does and the Matt and Toby thing. And it's like, I'm really intrigued by life design in the way that
life design, that's what I've been saying. Yeah.
Not so much only do what feels good, because you and I are probably the only dudes that know how hard as hell it is to live this kind of life, but just do what you want and then just deal with the shit that comes with it, you know? And I think that's something that a lot of people don't want. They want to jump in and then when it gets hard, they jump out, or they're afraid to jump in and they could do so much more if they just jumped out of where they're at. And for me, I'm always just like, what's the worst that happens? Like Under Oath record crashes, King State bombs, I go bankrupt, like start over. That's fine. It'll take me 5 years to be right back.
All of those things are very possible and it's fine if they happen.
Exactly.
Like there, you're not making that up. All of those things can happen. And it's not, it's more than a 1% chance of all those things happening. I mean, it's a real chance.
Absolutely. I mean, King State just bought a building and, you know, me and my wife, we and Nate, like together, we couldn't collateralize our loan. So I had to sign over my home. So literally this house that's empty right behind you, me and my wife, and my wife included, had to go to the closing and put her name down saying, if Tim's an asshole and he screws everything up, you're now homeless. And she said, okay, like, let's just go do it.
That's a little aggressive, man. That's good. That, see, I can't get my wife to do that. I don't think so.
Yeah, you know, it's just crazy. I mean, it's just, it's an amazing thing to just have the support of your family, but also like know that the only reason why you have it is because you earned it and you haven't done anything so drastic or crazy that makes them question your ability to succeed. And it's still always a risk, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, I just really love that.
Absolutely. And you said it's all, here's something that is, I think, profound that you just said a minute ago, which was, you know about culture and vibe, and the rest is just money or something like that. I've been saying something so similar to that. I have not used that language, but I know exactly what you mean. I've been saying that what we know how to do is design experiences. That's the way exactly. The language I've used for the thing. You're saying like I know
you might not have
living room shows and big shows and
the best.
You said culture and vibe, and it's the same thing I've been saying about all the stuff that we do. I'm trying to build some new touring models, like some new touring experiences that I don't think exist very well, or I think there's a big vacuum for. And I've been trying to get everybody on the team motivated and say, listen, we know what we're doing. We know how to create an experience and a vibe, and shows are so bad, like, I feel like shows and festivals have become outdated so bad, and they don't put any effort into the user experience. Like, go stand on concrete for 4 hours until you see the band you like and wait outside and all that. That can be improved so much, and that's what I'm working on right now. But it's
awesome.
Creating an experience that when you get there from 6 p.m. until you leave at 10 p.m., every minute of it, that was great. So that's what I've actually been spending my brain on, and it's the same thing you're saying. I'm going to get the vibe right. I'm going to get the culture right and make it a can't-miss event, and if we do that, it'll work. The money we'll figure out. We'll just get the data and tweak the numbers until it works.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's like, you know, Nate, you know, I know you know Nate, but I mean, my brother-in-law and partner in King State specifically, like, he, you know, had a stint in modeling, and he's super, you know, good looking, he's fashionable, mm-hmm. and he has this whole thing about, like, you could send a dude with no style to Sid Mashburn with $10,000, and you could send me with $50 and a Slurpee to H&M, and I'll come out looking better, you know? And it's kind of this idea of, like, it's not about the money or the structure or how much gear you have or how good your recording studio is. It's like, if you have a vision, you can record something on your iPhone that blows what I can do out of the water in a full-fledged, mm-hmm. you know, SSL console studio. And I think that's the biggest problem for a lot of people, is they overcompensate for lack of vision and lack of ideas with money. And it's mm-hmm. like, you can't buy intrigue. You can't buy something that's interesting. I mean, your podcast is interesting because you guys, you know, especially on the Bad Christian side, like, you guys just constantly joke at each other, and you've created a culture. And, you know, there's some episodes that sound great, and some episodes you could tell the guy's on his iPhone in the middle of Iowa and it keeps cutting out. People still listen, including me, because you've created something that transcends needing production quality and a cool intro and NPR level wow factor. It's just good content, and people want to gravitate towards that. And would everyone love it to sound better? Probably, but it sounds great already, you know? And that's kind of where everything that Under Oath and King State and everything I've ever done has been, is like, we only have this much, so let's make up the rest somehow. And the only way to do that is to be creative with the resources you have and the creativity you have.
Well, that's fine, except for it sounds like totally the opposite of the new Under Oath to me. So let's pivot there. You certainly did not record the new Under Oath record on an iPhone or with your vision from your studio. It's the very much the opposite of that. And you didn't do a lot with a little resources. You did a hell of a lot with a lot of resources. I cannot believe all the marketing. I've never seen anything like it. As a guy that's been on a label,
neither have I.
Felt a big push and everything. I cannot believe, and I can run numbers in my head, but there's so many things that I see that you guys in Fearless did that cost so much money that I cannot believe it. Like, what it costs for the billboard or the projector at the after release party. It's crazy. I haven't talked to you much about it all, but tell me about this monstrosity that cost. I know it cost, you know, millions of dollars involved here. Like, it's definitely seven figures of money into the whole everything. So tell me about this and the recording. I've never been around a recording this much. I mean, this is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's weird because, you know, we went on a Rebirth tour a couple of years ago. We decided to get back together, do a couple more festivals, started thinking about music. And then when we kind of realized we wanted to make a record, Randy, our manager, just kind of put out the feelers. We were still on Tooth and Nail, and we owed Brandon one more record. And we started getting a bunch of other offers, and we started meeting with people. People wanted us to come to their studios, co-write this. I'll have, you know, Tom Morello come play on your record. Like, we were getting all, like, the big clickbait, whatever. And, you know, we landed on Fearless because, just like Tooth and Nail was in 2006, like, Fearless is still an indie label, but they're a part of Concord Music Group, which is a massive mm-hmm. conglomerate, and they're still all independent labels, but they're the biggest independent label in the world. And they have, you know, everyone from Ghost to Marilyn Manson to Seether to I Prevail and August Burns Red and everyone in between. So they get our scene, and they also get, like, you know, everything else. They have jazz labels in their conglomerate. So, you know, they came, and it wasn't necessarily about the money or the rollout or what are we going to get from you. Like, they just got our band. And the really interesting thing with Fearless is we had a bunch of offers and everyone wanted to hear music. We had meetings. And like Bob from Fearless literally said, Under Oath wants to make the record, and just slid, like literally gangster style, like slid an offer with a number on it and said, I don't need to hear anything. You guys have never shit the bed yet. So why would I expect you to start it now? I know what Under Oath is. I know what I'm buying sight unseen, like ship me my car from Maine to Florida. I know I want it.
Yeah.
And so that really set the tone for us. And then, you know, we started meeting Jenny and Heather and all the people at, you know, Fearless and then Concord. And we started having these deep dives. And you know about that, right? You sit in the room and all the guys in the label, you know, crew and all the ladies and everyone that does marketing and radio, they sit, you have the big vision quest, and they kind of puff you up. And it's like, all right, cool. And we went down this whole list, right? We're going to have billboards on Sunset. We're going to have, you know, projectors. We're going to have wheat paste all over Brooklyn and like secret stuff. And there's going to be these symbols. I was like, all right, yeah, this all sounds great. And then the meeting got done. And I was like talking to Randy and a couple of the guys. And I asked Jenny, I'm like, so how much of this is like actually going to happen? Cause I've had a million of these talks. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I wouldn't bring anything up that I didn't think I could nail. And I was like, all right, well, we'll see. And then the first billboard came on Sunset. And I was like, oh, they did it. And then the second one came, and then the micro billboards came, and then the release parties came, and then the radio happened. And like, that was the weirdest thing for me. It's like, yeah, we have all these things. Like, yeah, like whatever. And then I think this Monday was our ad date for radio, and we charted 40 on the top 40 active rock charts a week ago before the ad date was even happening. We were just getting like pre-construction spins, and we broke the top 40. And I was like, we're on radio. I'm getting updates. Like 45 stations are playing you across the country.
Oh, man.
And we've never had that. Everything we've ever built is just us and then someone else coming alongside us and empowering us to do more of what we do. And, you know, Tooth and Nail, with all due respect, was great. But, you know, at that point, it was just wherever Under Oath's going, we just need to empower it and power it. Where this time is the first time where Fearless has come with stuff that we're like, we never would have thought about that. And I don't even know if that's possible, but that sounds cool. And then 2 weeks later it happens, and it keeps happening.
And works. So, and is working. It's more important because anybody can spend money. I mean, that's not like when I started seeing all this stuff, it's one thing to spend money. Anybody can do that. It's not hard. You just have to be rich and dumb, which I guess it is hard to be rich and dumb. But if you are, you can spend a bunch of money. You can get over ambitious. And when I started seeing some of these things that were happening, I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, I hope this pays off, because this is a real push. Like, this is big time, and it is working. It is getting on the radio. And I'm telling you, I wasn't sure that the response was going to go the way that it was. I had some real worries about it early on. I mean, we can talk about
as
that later
all.
Too.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure how confident you were, how well played all this was, or what's calculated and what's not, but it's been very fun. And actually, what can I say? Like, I felt invested. Like, I've been watching, like, how's this going to go? Is that going to go bad? Is this going to go good? Was that a good idea? Is this going to work? I've been, like, I wouldn't say losing sleep over it, but I've been kind of riveted to this whole thing. It's such an experiment, it feels like.
Yeah. And it was, and we knew, like, you know, when we went in to make the record, and we could probably get there in a second, but like, when we went in to make the record, you know, we didn't know what kind of record we wanted to make. And the record we came out with was very, we were aware of it being controversial, right? So it's like, we have some core Under Oath songs, which is core to old people, old fans. It's like, old it's heavy, people. There's breakdowns, there's riffs, there's whatever. And then
name
we realized,
those songs,
like,
that you think are those. We can slow down and talk about that. But what songs are those to you?
I don't think we have any like typical, like, here's a bone, pay off the old kids, and then like try to go build new territory. I think everything's still kind of moving in the same direction. But I think the first song, it has to start somewhere. On My Teeth, the first single we released. No Frame, I think, is a very like obvious, like Under Oath going on like a Radiohead acid trip tangent and then ending in like a big like thing. And then beyond that, like, there's just everything in between. And certain songs have heavier parts than others. But, you know, we ended up kind of going into the studio realizing, like, Spencer had spent the last, you know, 5 years doing Sleepwaver, 4 years, and he became, you know, a singer. And Aaron had done his thing, and I'd done my thing with Carol Hood, and we've all done our own things. And Chris is scoring movies, and it's like, how do you make all that work? Because, you know, all of the old records were, we were similar to Emery. We were living in the same space. We were listening to the same stuff. The one wave was the only wave because we were all on the same wave all the time. Mm-hmm. And then we went in the studio and we're like, yo, like, I like hip hop and I like Run the Jewels and I like, you know, the soundtrack to Interstellar. And how do we integrate that? It's like, how do we integrate all that, you know? And so we ended up just kind of with this weird cocktail of ideas and demos. And it really took a lot to, like, Rubik's cube everything to make sure all the sides were the same color, but it still felt like the same block. And I think we did that. And, you know, the one thing I will more than admit is I think this record, for the first time in Under Oath history, is not a continuous journey. And I think that's the one comment I've seen where people are like, oh man, like, these are all great songs, but it's not this big hour-long roller coaster ride. It's like you have to ride a song for 3 minutes and then get off and you get on a completely different ride. And I think that's really interesting, but I think that's really cool in the sense that, you know, I didn't realize how alienated certain dudes in our band felt about our music until we got in the studio. And I have Aaron and Spencer literally looking me in the face, like, not drunk, not late, not angry, just sober-minded, straight face, middle of the day, going, there are songs on every record that we've had that I've not liked and that somehow you and someone else pushed through. And we've always felt like we had stuff we liked and then we had stuff that you liked that we didn't, that made it. And
you're talking about you specifically, or that's the way everybody's been? Is that, or are you trying to say Tim has pushed, like, you specifically?
I mean, I tread lightly on saying yes, definitely me and only me, because I think at that point, then by default, I also have to take, like, a little bit of credit for everything we've done well. Mm-hmm. But I would say yes. I would say, like, going into this record, it's always been Tim's the bulldog. He sets a pace and then he gets people that reinforce his vision. And then we all have to try to figure out a way to, like, fight for our own right to be a person,
mm-hmm.
you know? Sorry about that. And then, no, you know, so then we're in that spot where, like, you know, we're going in and Aaron and Spencer are writing stuff on their own and me and Chris are writing stuff on our own. And we all have these different pockets. And, you know, what we really had to do is figure out a way for everyone to be fully present on this album. And that was the first time that's ever happened. And so I always felt like it was, and I always felt like Under Oath was always Under Oath. And it was always authentic. And everyone's like, yeah, it was your version of Under Oath that was always authentic. And I'm like, damn, you know, so we had to, like, let go. And we had to really, like, I personally had to just go, let's just see what everyone has to offer here and not just be this gatekeeper between your idea getting off the ground or not. And so we started chasing these ideas that 10 years ago would have been like, no way. Why are we ever going to do that? That's crazy.
Right.
That's not what we are. So yeah, it was really interesting. So that's why the record sounds so dynamic, because it is. And, like, this is a Tim song. That's a Chris song. And then Spencer comes in and makes the Chris song more and a him song. And it's now a us song. But in the past, it was like, there's one path, there's one wave. We all write it, get on or get off.
Well, you know? It has to do with this, with what you would call a scene or a genre or subgenre kind of thing. So no matter what, though, it's difficult because you have intentionally, or not intentionally, but matter-of-factly left a very specific scene and subgenre.
Absolutely.
So that must have been a decision, which I want to hear about. And then at the same time, Active Rock, so maybe a good way to describe it, is on the Active Rock charts, and then the production itself is another question, but the production itself is very cohesive. Like, it's not all over.
Yes.
Like, on one hand, you're saying we took everybody's ideas and had to make them all work, but then the sound of the record is completely produced in a direction that is cohesive and consistent. So
absolutely.
Tell me about how did you decide and know ahead of time what this level of production is and was?
Yeah. I mean, I think the best analogy I can give is, like, you know, a 12 song under oath album in the past was one bus, 12 seats, and all songs had their own seat, one driver, one engine, one unit. And now it's four or five different vehicles, but all on the same interstate with the same GPS going the same direction at the same speed. But each section kind of looks a little different, but it's all still moving that way. And I think that's where Matt Squire, our producer, really came in, you know. And we were interviewing producers. We interviewed like Nick, you know, we met with Nick Raskulinix, who did Deftones. And he was like, yeah, I'm doing a Megadeth album or something crazy. And then you'll be right in after. He's a huge, you know, amazing producer. He did Foo Fighters, all this stuff. And then we went all the way down the list, down to guys who are, you know, just had their first decent record come out and everything in between. And when we met with Matt, the number one thing, just like Fearless, it wasn't about how much are you, where do you live, do you work in Pro Tools, do you work in Logic, what mics do you have? It was literally, the first conversation was, I know your band. And he started citing specific parts on old records that are not singles. And he's like, yeah, track four on this record, that bass tone on the bridge, I love that part. And that clicked to me going, okay, so he actually knows our band. Mm-hmm. So that's number one most important thing to me. He actually cares. He's a fan, or at least a listener. He's aware. He knows our DNA from afar. And then beyond that, you know, one thing I asked him, I had a one-on-one call with him because I actually missed the first deep dive call, was, you know, we have so many different people and I don't think recording is going to be really trying to get the performance out of people, because Aaron's literally like the best drummer in the world. Chris is just in his own world writing shit on his phone. He's just a monster. I can play any part that I write, I can play. So it wasn't about, you know, the one-on-one that I had with Matt was, you know, not so much about performance. I literally just said, we have four people that have been doing four different things for the better part of 4 to 8 years. I mean, Aaron left 8 years ago, 10 years ago, actually. And so the biggest thing we need in the room is not so much someone who knows what a good take is, but really knows how to kind of dive into psychology. And we need a therapist, and we need to figure out like what under oath is now, because all of us don't know. And all of us think under oath is something different to each other. And we're all in under oath, so that we're all right. So we have to figure out a way to make everyone being right, but also sound like it's not a flea market with a knife shop and then like baked bread over here. It's got to feel like something real. So it's like, and that's what he said. He's like, dude, I have a degree in psychology. Like, the reason why people enjoy working with me is because I know what you guys want. Within a week, I'll know who you guys are and I'll know how to communicate. And I'll, instead of you guys fighting, like, let me fuse that. And so that was really interesting. And so we went in and, you know, first day, he's like, nice to meet you. We're all hanging out. We're all homies, whatever. Went down every idea. And I mean, every idea. We're talking like songs that sounded like they could be on like rock radio to like fusion of hip hop songs, riffs that I wrote that I was just out of my mind thinking that could possibly work. But he heard all of them and he took that as kind of an introduction on who everyone is and where they're coming from. And then he's like, I like that element, but let's use that on another song that actually makes sense for the record. So we had this really cool thing for the first time where, just like the label kind of taking lead instead of taking our lead and empowering us like Matt Goldman always had, you know, we had a producer who was actually producing us and going, I know Tim's right on this part. Let's let him go ape shit. And then when it's time to reel him in, Spencer, chill, I'll reel him in. Same with, you know, me, we're going to let Spencer kind of go nuts on this. And he's going to sing instead of scream, but trust me, like the waves coming next, we're going to hit that dynamic that you really wanted this song. So it's a really interesting kind of, you know, trust-based relationship where we all trusted each other, but we all trusted each other more once we knew that Matt was making sure that none of us were winning more than the other. And it was a really interesting scenario. And then we ended up coming out with like weird songs, like It Has to Start Somewhere, No Frame, I Gave Up, all those songs we wrote in the studio. It was such a good environment that we literally came in with like 15, 20 ideas, maybe 25. And we ended up keeping like 5 or 6, 7. And then we wrote 2 or 3 straight from scratch because the vibe was so good. And once we all realized how to communicate with each other, I'll also having Coach in the room, he's like, yeah, I like that. Yo, pause, slow your roll. Let's hear this guy. Boom, 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 boom. And a song comes out in 4 hours. It was insane. Well,
did you know that the album was going to turn? what I'm curious is, did you know that the sound of the album, which I do think is very consistent and well and very produced, did you have that? And did you speak that out loud? Like, we want to give as many attempts as we can to be active rock or get on the radio.
No.
Or we want it to have, I think a lot of people are really noticing and a lot of people really digging the detail in the production itself.
Sure, sure.
And it's also hard to know with your band what Chris did and what's production. Like, what's a member writing versus what's the production style? And that's what makes it so interesting to talk
sure.
about.
Sure. Yeah, and I think anytime you can hear one person out loud, like a guitar solo, you've done it wrong. Like, the point for me of being in a band is to have three, four, in our case, six elements all working to where they kind of crossfade and blend. And it's just, at the end of the day, it's a really strong tiki drink. Is that rum? Is it the pineapple? Is it pineapple rum? Is it the garnish? Is it cherry? Is it this? Mm-hmm. Nobody knows. When you take a sip, it's all of it, and it just makes sense. So I think that was the goal is, you know, for the first time we were approaching, like, instead of overplaying and having people try to fit their parts in these weird nooks and crannies and shoving 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag, we actually took the opposite approach. We said, what does the song need? Does it feel like it maybe needs to go like this? Should we bump it up 4 BPM? Should we lower the tuning? Should we higher the tuning? We got more into like the bone structure and the frame and the DNA. And then everything else just kind of naturally happened. On the production side, we knew that we wanted someone to figure out how to glue us all together again, not just as friends, but as collaborators and artists. But then, you know, we knew kind of off top that we were going to have a few songs that made sense for radio, because that's what Spee's been writing for 5 years. And that's where Aaron's been. I mean, Aaron's had a top 5 single with the Almost, and these guys were writing individually and then together without any of us. So these songs were coming out very structured, very straightforward. And so, you know, me and Chris get in the studio and my studio in Tampa, and we start writing these super abstract, super angular, you know, pieces of music. Where do vocals fit? We don't know. It's all about the vibe. It's about the wave. And so in those moments, instead of just scrapping this one because it's too weird, scrapping this one because it's too simple, we said, well, how do we take this simple idea and then really like enhance it and make it something that's worth being on an Under Oath album? And how do we take this really abstract idea that could be anyone just screwing off in Ableton and make it something worth asking someone to listen to for 5 minutes? And that's really where the collaboration started and ended. And then Squire and Eric Taft, our engineer, they were all there to constantly, you know, make sure that we were staying focused and not going down a psychotic tangent, either way radio or way Radiohead. Yeah. And those are the two things. I think radio and Radiohead are like the two polar opposites. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we kind of hit the half pipe and we kind of touch each rail a bit. And I think that's where everyone wanted to be. You know, and for me, like, yeah, would I want 12 no frames? Absolutely. That's what Carolhood is. That's my, I don't care about anything and I don't have anyone to answer to aside from the two dudes in the band. And we all want this, so we're just going to go do that. Mm-hmm. In Under Oath, it's a lot to say that there's not any extra pressure on what do fans expect? What does the label expect? What does everyone expect? What do we want is a lie. I think we've always done a really good job of knowing that pressure is there, but stoically being able to remove ourselves and not be attached to that and let that kind of ship sail. But also, we all saw that ship sail. We all know that's in the same ocean that we're riding in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, dealing with all of that was really easy because Squire dealt with that. And not one time we have the word single, focus track, active rock, top 40, whatever, all these terms. I still don't know all the terms because we didn't use them. And, you know, and it was really interesting when Bob from Fearless, he literally signed us, bought us out of our tooth and nail deal, then paid for us to go with Squire, like basically blank checked us all the way here. And then he's like, yo, I got to figure out what I'm paying for. I really want to hear stuff. He flew down and we played it in order. And the first song he heard was It Has to Start Somewhere, which is not active rock. It's not radio. It's not anything. It's just middle fingers up the whole way. With a lot of weird dynamics. He got done. We put him in like the pilot's chair, big chair right in the center, monitors, full stereo imaging. And he literally turned around and he just said, shook his head for a bit and then took about 10 seconds, just goes, it's a new era, boys. Next song. You did great. And that was it. And then we just kept playing. And he was just like, I knew I didn't have to check on you. Like, you delivered on every front. Every old Under Oath fan's going to be psyched. There's a few songs here that I think with the right team, we could probably work to radio, but they're not obvious because they're still you. And then there's just some fucking bangers. And so it's just this weird thing where even the label wasn't sitting there going, no, go back. We need something for this. We need something for that. We're trying to get sync. We're trying to get that. They just go, here's the record. And they said, great, we can work with this. And we're going to bust our ass because you guys are a weird band, but we're going to make it work because we believe in it. And that's really, really special.
Well, you said something interesting before about the way that it works of having everybody contribute in their own way. That must be really hard for, so it must be hard for you. So think about it this way. You said before about the, you don't want everybody overplaying to try to be heard. But on the other hand, what people are used to from the scene you're from is that extra raw, almost transparent thing where when you listen to a record, and we've talked about this on the show before, it's like, oh, that's Tim. He plays in left channel. That's him. I hear his picking. I hear it. You know, it's you. And then every little thing is, it's just the band coming through the speakers, and you'd say that's this and that's Spencer. And it's just so raw like that. And what you're talking about here with the cocktail recipe is completely different. Like, and I think that might be what some people don't like. They go, well, where's Tim? I can't tell. What did Chris do? Yeah. I can't tell. But that's by design. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
And has that been difficult to you to not like, where's Tim, for instance?
Not really. You know, I've heard like, yeah, I sure wish Aaron and Spencer let Tim play more. Like, that's why I listen to this band. Or, you know, I'm glad Sleepwave poisoned Under Oath. And then you realize like, I'm reading, you know, an Instagram feed and there's heart, thumbs up, holy shit, oh my God, I'm dead, this is the greatest. And then like one like pissed off asshole right here, you know? Yeah. And then you start realizing like the people that are really upset have the right to be because they're fans. Like if you're a fan of something and someone makes a move, your favorite team trades your quarterback, you're allowed to go, I hate that GM, I hate that
coach. Is that what you think this is like though? I mean, that's actually a pretty good analogy, but is this like a team? Is this like New England trading Tom Brady?
We'll
try to come up with the equivalent, because I think you have made a big and bold move that is for sure understandable to irritate people. Some people.
Exactly. Now,
I never defend their behavior online. They're horrible. There's idiots. That's terrible the way people talk about people and do all that stuff. But what is this like? Like, you have made a clear move and this is different. It's like trading a popular player on a sports team.
I don't think so. I think the closest analogy is we can just go back to our own band. I mean, we were a death metal band, and then we released They're Only Chasing Safety. And everyone was like, wait, what? There are people like, bring Dallas back. This new Spencer kid's full of shit. He's the worst. He ruined my favorite band. And then a year later, it was like, right? Yeah. And like, we did actually piss off and lose people. And then like, there were other people that actually came for the first time and saw what was happening, goes, I like this. And then we did it again the next year, Define the Great Line. Everyone's waiting for, you know, Reinventing Your Exit Part 2, Chasing Safety Part 2. We're going to fly you to K-Rock and we're going to get you on radio. We're like, nah, check this out. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and then that record did well. And so we've always kind of been okay with going, where do we want to go? And let's just really hope that people understand and we have people's trust where they're going to go down a journey with us. And we just made that same decision again. And it just so happens to be, it's funny how if you're a pop band and you go heavier, you're like groundbreaking and you're edgy and you don't give a shit and you're like the coolest. But if you're, our last record was so heavy and so almost pretentious in a way. I had an interviewer tell me, your last record was super pretentious and I loved it. I gave it a 9. And your new record's not nearly as pretentious. And I also gave it a 9. And it was so funny. He was like a German guy. So he's super dry and straightforward. Mm-hmm. But he literally said it was so hard to listen to and pretentious. And it was so awesome. And I think if you're one of those people that think that's what Under Oath is, this record sounds like a complete curveball and pivot. And it is. And that's what we've always done. And so going back to my analogy or my thought is when you go from poppier to like more angular and more, we do what we want. Like Paramore just did. Paramore's new record is amazing, but it's done so artistically compared to just straightforward, you know what I mean? And you get praise for that because you're on like you're the wave and pitch work is like finally this, that, and the other. And that's just an analogy. And then we went the opposite way, but it's the same lateral move.
Say it that way though. You went the opposite way, which is what? You went from pretentious to what?
I think we went from pretentious being Aaron Left and Daniel Davison, our super good friend and our drummer at the time. Daniel and I kind of set the tone and really shoved like our angular agenda more than anything else on the record. So people that like that record will be blindsided by this record because this record is written by me, same guy, same middle fingers up all the time. Do what I want, say what I want, write what I want. Hope you like it. If you don't, that's fine. You can leave, no problem. And then you have dudes that write pop songs and country songs and rock songs, and Chris does scores. And we have all these different people. And Chris really stepped up and I think glued us together more because mm-hmm. Spencer and Aaron are kind of on this side on songwriting. And I'm way over here on just like vibe and anger and energy. And I think we had to figure out a way to fuse that. And I think that that's really the key element here is instead of just killing one off, we fused it where the old records were, we go head to head and then whoever has the biggest flamethrower wins and we just move out of frame with the other option. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if there's an analogy, but I think there's songs that are more interesting and more abstract and more artistic than other songs you've ever written on the same album. And there's also songs that are, we haven't written something so structured and straightforward since Chasing Safety on this album.
Yeah. So it's that's what I'm trying to get you to say. Everything. You said if you are poppy and you go more angular in your terminology, then that is looked well at. And you're
cool
saying
now.
Yeah, but I'm trying to get you to say out loud, we have gone more poppy.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've gone more structured. I don't think we're mm-hmm. poppy, but I think we're more structured for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think we've eradicated a lot of the screaming side. And that wasn't by design.
There's some really aggressive screaming in it, though. So that's
I agree. But if you actually listed it out, and there was like a court deposition of Spencer screams here and Spencer sings here, it's weighted very, very highly on the singing side. And that was something that we were kind of just sitting in the studio going, "Is this okay? Is this us? Do we want this? Yes. Okay. Will people be okay with that?" We just had to go, "We don't care," mm-hmm. you know. And at the end of the day, like a lot of people. I think we'll take that and go, wow, that's not what I expected. And then a month later go, wow, I can't mm-hmm. stop listening to XYZ song that I would have yelled at you about if I heard it before and I was your manager, I wouldn't even let you put it out, you know? And I think that's where we're at now is like, you know, the record leaked, the week before it came out and the Reddit forum that we had, that was all like first singles, great, Raptures, whatever. I wish they went back to their old stuff. There were all these people, same screen name, just going, wow, like now that I hear it all, mm-hmm. I kind of fucked up. Like I just jumped to a conclusion and I was mad. I didn't even know what I wanted, but I didn't want that. Now that I hear it, like, I actually love this. I want this now. And there's also people that are just like, nah. And there's other people that are like, I just found out about you guys. And this is the first record I've ever heard from you. So, I mean, I don't know. And I don't really care. You know,
I feel
just
like it's a brilliant way that it's rolled out, and I think so many things have gone in your favor here, and it's just so weird. It's almost like the narrative was. This is the way I feel about it. Like at first, it was like, "Uh-oh, trouble's a brewing. Comments are bad. Here we go," and maybe they've made this mistake in this way, or maybe they should release something else first.
Sure.
And then everybody got this thing where it's like, "Wait a second, why are you guys being such assholes about somebody else's music?" And then after that narrative started taking hold, like, "Who are these dumb idiots that think it's okay to talk this way about other people online, especially people that they've liked who are doing a different thing?" And then it was like, at some point, it was like, "No." And everybody wanted to defend under oath and get like they saw the reaction from the nasty people and like, "No, I do owe them, give them a chance here." And I think it actually made more people sit with it and breathe and not want to be that person. I think it made people listen a second and a third time and to find the real stuff. And then now it's this overwhelming wave of people that are like, "Yeah, these guys did something different and I'm going to sit with it and find out." And of course you're gaining a lot of new people because there's some great stuff in it too. So I really think there's been a little bit of a battle that I wasn't sure if you would win. And it seems like y'all have won. And it's like big balls, and it's amazing. And I'm just so impressed by it. Like, it's like conviction to make a decision, stick to it. And the public part of the battle, I think you have won too.
Well, I think that's the number one thing, though, right? Like, if Bad Christian Podcast started having more pastors on because you got flack from Christians, or if Break It Down started having more lead singers on because no one wants to hear from the weirdo guitar player, they want to hear from this guy, right? Like, if you start catering the content you're making and the art you're making to aggregate more or less or please or try not to displease, the people that are actually supporting you are going to smell that, and they're going to smell bullshit, and they're going to be out, right? So it's like, I think the number one thing that people have said is, I don't know about this album yet based on two singles, but I know these guys, and they've never done anything they haven't believed in. So I got to believe that once the project comes out, it's going to be something really special. And I think that, and I think, like you said, those quote unquote, like out of the blue, out of the woods, like Robin Hood level defenders online, we're only there because they know we've never done anything that we're just like, yeah, like let's get whatever. Let's get Lorde on a song and try to go to top 40 radio. You know, do we like her? Yeah. Does she make sense from their own? Of course not. So it's like, I think they really saw On My Teeth and then Rapture going, yo, like it's too close to call, but let's trust the band for the next nine songs. Right.
Yeah.
And then the radio people go, Rapture, finally, we finally had something that's not so drastic that we can actually play you, because people that were 24 or 20 in 2004 when they bought our record are now 30, 34, 33. Anyway. And they're the actual radio players now. They're like, we love your band, but you guys are the worst at giving us something we can actually play. And so it was a really interesting thing, because when we wrote these songs organically, radio people started going, oh, I think I can work this. It's going to take a little bit of work, but I'm really going to work this. And we want to make this work for you guys, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just think overall, you know, I think the one of the Reddit or Instagram forums said it best. There was one comment literally right here. This is the worst album I've ever heard in the last 15 years. Not from Under Oath. I mean, ever, period. Next comment is, Under Oath finally released the first song, being Rapture, that they will play in arenas sold out for the next decade or two. They have finally arrived. Neither of those statements are true.
But it was probably so
interesting to see the polarization. And it was like, we have the worst guy and our biggest cheerleader. And the reality is like right in the middle. And yeah, will our tours be bigger this year than last year? We hope. Will they go down a bit because we're not cool anymore? Hopefully not. But any of those things are possible, and it's all a risk. And we just did what we want. Definitely. You know,
you got to live in it. You just got to live in it.
And I mean, even with Emery, though, you guys have released so many different records and dynamics. I mean, I forget what record it is, but there's a song where you guys have like a Broadway, like, well, you can know, like something weird where like the stuff goes down halftime and Toby's got four harmonies and there's like a weird shuffle. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting here going, this makes absolutely no sense based on if I was a Walls kid, right?
Yeah, right.
And it's like, and so you guys push all these boundaries, and I'm sure you've seen the same thing, like wish it would have more breakdowns, wish it had this, and then people sit with it and like, why are you still coming to the show then if we're the worst band in the world, you know?
Yep.
And it's like, I had a kid on Instagram when I posted a song, and he literally commented 6.2 send. And then I went to his, then I went to his website or his Instagram. He's a photographer, and his photographs were average. And I just thought about posting 6.1 on his entire story, just every photo, you know. And it's just, it's like, and then you get in the game, and it's fun to kind of like dip into and kind of get a little riled up. But I mean, at the end of the day, like, you don't have to like our band. You don't have to listen to our band. I think if you did and you came and saw us, you're going to get it. And if you don't, then we're not for you anymore. There's 15,000 other bands.
So I'm a fan, and I'm thinking, oh, now they're this old sound. What are they? Hate their old albums? Are they a new band? So, you know, like, as if you've, and it felt like that with a lot of the albums that you did. Like, oh, what do they hate? There was a time when it felt like, well, now you don't even like their Only Chasing Safety, and you weren't even playing any of those songs, and then eventually played them again. So here's what I want to know is, if you see Under Oath this year, is it all new stuff because fuck the old stuff, we've moved on and we're here now?
No,
is
actually,
this the new Under Oath or what?
No fixed tour set, without giving it away, I think is 14 or 15 songs. There's 5 new songs. There's 2 songs off Disambiguation with Daniel. There's 3 or 4 songs off Chasing Safety, 3 or 4 songs off Defending the Great Line. And that's really the sum of the whole. Mm-hmm. And everything's weighted equally.
You've already done the set. Like, does it feel like, I found that very cohesive when you see a band and you think their albums are so different and then you go see them live and you can't remember which song's on which album, but it's like, oh yeah, I totally get it. Like, that's the missing piece for everybody.
I think you're going to definitely figure out what album's what. I mean, there's no way to butt up any heavy song to Reinventing Your Exit or whatever it is. Right. So, I think now, instead of just thinking through this weird lens of like, we want people to think we're a certain way, we want to act a certain way. Like, I've been really just operating a lot on, you know, gratitude and just the idea of like, I'm grateful for who I was when I was 20, writing Reinventing Your Exit. And
you're
that 20-year-old kid wrote the best song he could.
Yeah. You don't renounce your old stuff.
Yeah, we can't. We did at one point because we didn't know who we were and we just felt like that was a weird blemish on us being a cool band, which I think was just immaturity at the time. But yeah, I mean, I look at our Spotify now and like Boy Brushed Red has the most streams of any Under Oath song in the world ever. Right. And it's like, you know, we can make jokes about how cheesy or how weird or how funny it is that that's our biggest song. We have so many other better songs and we do. But like at the end of the day, like let's celebrate that song that many other people keep celebrating. So we're going to play that. We're going to play this. We're going to play this. And, you know, if we're not artistically moved by it because that's our old selves, the energy off the crowd, we just start having an exchange. And it's amazing. We did that on Rebirth. You know, we played all of Chasing Safety front to back. And there were songs on there we've never played live in our lives. We had to relearn them from start to finish. And like, it never felt weird. It just felt like we're here and there's 12 feet from this stage to this little fence and there's 2,000 people on the other side. And it's really just 2,006 people doing one thing. And I think that's really, really important. And I just think being grateful, I'm 34 years old, like joined this band when I was 17. And it's just, it's insane. The fact that I can go out and play any show in any country or any city and at least have it be decent enough to pay myself to get there.
Oh yeah. That in is itself, just, yeah, just it's being amazing. Justified. That is being justified as you go somewhere and there's a reason when you get there, it wasn't a sham. It was a reason you should have been there. And yeah, that's totally
and,
it.
And I think I've heard you talk about that with Emery on a couple of your podcasts recently too, but it's like you reverse engineer your expectations and just go, there's other people now that are still like hawking cars at CarMax and it's not because that's what they want to do. It's because they would love to be here, but they didn't get here. They don't have the guts to be here. So it's like, there's, and I don't think that we have to go into a class war on professions, but I think, you know, there's people that would kill to just be in Emory right now. Are you as big as Walls when you could sell 200,000 albums when CDs were existing? No. But would someone kill right now to take your spot in your band? Yes. So like know that and be okay and get up every day thanking the universe that you're still in your band. And that's kind of where I'm at too. It's like, I'm just in a spot where I'm like, yeah, like were there bigger years? Were there smaller years? Is our first week going to be as big as Define the Great Line? Never. So like what, I have two choices. I could be mad and feel like we're old and we're decaying or the industry, I'm so mad, streaming, everything's ruined. Or I can go, yeah, we're going to have a top 10 album and it's our 7th album. And this is insane. And we have billboards in LA and we have just all this crazy shit. And like, how beautiful is that? And people did that for us. Cause we wrote a record that everyone's like, yeah, not only are we going to pay for it, but now that we hear it, we're going to go balls out. And like, that's great. You know, we did it our way. We did it with people we loved. I loved recording. I love our dudes. And I love everyone that supported us. And if you don't like the record and you don't come to the show, that's okay too. You know, and it's like operating out of that awareness and almost like artistic stoicism, I think is what allows you to just let those really good comments go by without feeling like that's your new bar and let the horrible comments go by without going, oh, we're wrong. I'm not cool anymore. I don't get it anymore. This kid gets it better than I do. You know?
Yeah. Oh man, that's totally true. So I think the whole thing boils down, I'll button it up with this and tell me if you think it's right. But the thing is, great about it, just from where we even started talking, is you have to live in very much uncertainty, and there's so many things that you know for sure. Like, you live in this world, and everybody could apply this. I mean, you have to be brave enough to know for sure the things that you do know, like what you want to ride and what you feel, and you have to be able to let go of, I can't control the outcomes of this, but I have very strong opinions about the input and what I want to do and what I want to do next. And yes, I'm flexible. I may be wrong, but I feel very strongly that this is what I want to do. And I don't know if it'll work. I do not know.
Yep.
And that's what you're doing with your living situation or your band or the new direction of Under Oath. And that's why other people would rather work at CarMax, because paycheck comes on Friday. You can count on it.
Yeah.
Boss is a dickhead, but whatever.
A half packed up house. My kids are all living in one room. I have a gas station that I don't know how to pay for, that we can't get permitting for. And we have a new record out that a lot of people love and a lot of people hate. Like, I'm living the chaos and I love it.
And it's not wrong for people.
I'd rather just do a podcast with you and just chill and like keep talking about it. I'm not even worried. I'm just like, yo, it's all going to be good. I believe in myself. We're going to crush it. It's fine. You know,
and it's not for everybody. So anybody else, if you have a 401k job that's good and you like it, and that's you, that's very fine. Like, there is nothing to criticize about that person at all, as long as you can identify that is for you and that is what you want, and you accomplish it and you achieve it, and you should very much enjoy that. I think I could enjoy that, but I've just chosen a different path. The people that are in the middle, they're scared to do one or the other, or just being lazy. That's the people who
you got to pick a side, man.
You got to pick something there.
Yeah.
If the chaos isn't for you, please do not force yourself into that. You'll be miserable.
Yeah, you jump into the deep end, you're going to drown quick, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think that's it. And I was even, you know, not to keep mentioning your other podcast, but like Toby talking about being a truck driver on Bad Christian. It's like, we've come to a spot in our life, you and I, and I guess Toby, where we're so in control of everything we do, for good or bad. We take the wins and we also get really devastated by the losses. Like, we're unemployable. Like, you can't go get a job. I can't go get a job. No one's going to hire me. What's your resume? I own all my businesses. What are they? A band and a coffee shop. What's that about? I don't know. I've just been doing it since I was a teenager. It made money for a while. Now it doesn't. That's why I need your job. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, there's no skill set that you can prove, because we all have high school and GEDs.
The worst part about it is, if you got the job and did have the qualifications, you know that there's probably some period of weeks later where you're going to be like, what am I doing?
Full regret.
Please don't hear this, future boss. I'm probably not going to be that into it.
Sure.
I'll only be half engaged in what I'm doing for you in the future. And please don't come back and listen to this episode. But I'm probably spaced out sitting at my desk right now trying to think of a scheme to get out of this. Or my next job or what else I can do. And that's I'm not going to be a great employee if you hire me. Please don't listen to this, because I'm probably going to need a job at some point, whoever
you are. No, man. I mean, that's it. I mean, we work harder than everyone. And, you know, we have big years and small years, but I wouldn't change anything at all. I wouldn't change it for a minute or for $1 million.
Well, okay, so I got to run, you got to run, but what do you want to tell people about King State Coffee and Carrollhood? These are two other things that I'd love to see succeed, and they seem like they are, but they're both very cool things, and King State's been going great, it seems, if you're going to open a bar, too.
Yeah, King State's doing well. So, yeah, me and Nate Young from Amberlynn, who we married sisters 10 years ago. We've been brother-in-laws for a while, best friends before that, because we were on the same label. And then we started a business together, King State. We bought a coffee roaster in 2014, started roasting out of my garage, built it all out here, illegal operation. Nobody listened to this. Matt's future employer, as well as the city of Tampa. Mm-hmm. Then we graduated to a larger roasting facility. And then, the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, we closed on a gas station. So we bought a big 4-lot gas station, 1,700 square feet, with like 500 or 800 square feet of patio space where the old pumps used to be. And it's in a really cool neighborhood in Tampa. Last Thursday, we got our official wet zoning approval from city council. I had to go to court in between Chicago and LA, record release week, and came home, red eye, 9:30 a.m., court hearing, got wet zoned approval, 7 out of 7. 3 hours later, flew straight to Chicago to do our radio showcase. So I've been busy and I haven't slept, and it's hot in here because my AC's off. But we got a lot going on. And yeah, the bar is going to be open. It's going to be full beer, wine, full food, coffee, 7 a.m. till midnight every night. And we'll be open in August. And then Carol Hood's just another cool project. We don't make money. We don't play shows. We don't tour. We're not signed. We'd love to do more with it, but it's just, it's my pure vanity project. And it's Nate, again, from King State and Amberlynn, and then our friend Reed from, he used to be in Say Anything. So us three dudes just get together and it's like a couple beers and get in my studio, we just nerd out. And then when we have something worth diving into, we dive into it. And when we have enough to get mixed, we just put out EPs. So
it seems like a well-designed life. All those things sound very enjoyable and satisfying and hard work, and some of them pay and some of them are passion and some of them are in between. And it's
1,000%.
And they're all for your enjoyment, and they're functional. They're, you know, they're real projects that yeah. work. And
that
feels satisfying and is great. So
absolutely.
Tim, keep working on that life design. You're good at it. Maybe our future will be life business career designers, consultants,
life design coaches. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, not life coaches. Not really. That's not doesn't have the connotation. But career designer. That's something.
Sure.
Something like that.
Something absolutely.
Like that. We could possibly be qualified to do, but we'd have to start our own business to do it.
Yeah. Well, maybe we will. I'll call you after this podcast. Low key, we'll get it started. Yep.
All right. Thanks for talking. We'll do some Bad Christian stuff later this or next week or something like that too. There's a bunch of more Under Oath stuff to talk about. But thanks for doing this with me today.
Hell yeah, man. Tell Reva and Joey and Toby and all the crew I say what up.
You got it. Thanks, Tim.
All right. See ya.
Hi, I'm Emma.
And I'm Joe.
And we're the Professional Book Nerds. Two Mondays a month, we interview authors and talk about their upcoming books, what drives them, and their go-to order at the cafe.
On Thursdays, we share recommendations and dive into topics readers face, like how do I actually read the books on my to-be-read list?
You can find the Professional Book Nerds podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to learn more about us? Our website is professionalbooknerds.com, and you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at ProBookNerds.
We hope you'll come and listen, and as always,
happy reading!
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at SoundTalentMedia.com.